For A-State Connections, I'm Jonathan Reeves. Two professors at Arkansas State University have edited a book on the histories of women from the state. The book is titled Arkansas Women, Their Lives and Times. The book features 15 biographical essays featuring the prominent Arkansas women from the state's earlier frontier years to the late 20th century. Some of the women featured include Senator Hattie Carraway, Sue Cohen Morse, and Daisy Lee Gadsden Bates. The editors for the book are Dr. Charisse Jones Branch and Dr. Gary Edwards. Dr. Branch is the James and Wanda Lee Vaughn Endowed Professor of History and is director of the A-State Digital Press. Dr. Edwards is an associate professor of history at Arkansas State, and I asked Dr. Branch how the book got its start.
Well, this book is actually number 19, I think it is, in what the University of Georgia Press has called the Southern Women, Their Lives and Times. So most of the southern states have one of these volumes, or more in some cases. And I had written an essay for South Carolina women, I had written one for Tennessee women, and then the editors of the second volume of Tennessee women came to me and said, you know, you should edit a volume of this. And so I agreed, and I had another co-editor at the time, and we sort of started beating the bushes to find authors to write essays for us. And so this started probably back in, I want to say 2008 or 2009.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Dr. Edwards, how were you brought in on this?
Dr. Jones Branch asked me at some point, I guess, to come up. I can't even remember. It's taken such a long time. I mean, 5 or 6 years ago, I think she asked me. And like her also, I had written an essay for Tennessee Women. And so I was familiar with the series. Anybody who does Southern history is very familiar with the series. The University of Georgia Press has overseen this for 20 years plus, and so it's gotten a lot of attention. The series itself has a fine reputation for highlighting women's history in the South. And as Dr. Jones Branch said, Arkansas, I think, is the last one to horse across the finish line here with this one, which, as a smaller state, it's more difficult to find a number of people who are doing research in Arkansas history and Arkansas women's history, even more so. So it, you know, was a challenge too, to one of the reasons why it took as long as it did.
So how did you overcome some of those challenges?
We had to, you know, put out a call for authors. Eventually, when Charisse brought me on board, we put out a call for authors. We were always in contact with the series editors at the UGA Press, and they gave us oversight, but then we had to submit a call for people who were doing work on Arkansas women and just sort of see what you get back. You never know what you're going to get back. You ask for things and say, who's doing work on Arkansas women? We're looking for essays that are biographical in nature about women from Arkansas, have an Arkansas connection. And some of the things that came back just, you know, wouldn't work at all, because people didn't have enough of a connection to be considered really an Arkansas woman. And so Charisse and I had to make editorial decisions to overcome some of those problems. But then the other thing is like I said, there just aren't as many people doing work in Arkansas history in general and Arkansas women. Some southern states have just an overabundance of people working in them. South Carolina, North Carolina, you know, those are old states with colonial histories that have old archives and deep roots and deep topics, and they go back a long way. Arkansas is different. You know, it's a southwestern frontier state, and so it's just not like the coastal South. It has a deeper, longer archival history, and so that is a big challenge, I think, for a book like this.
Right. And Dr. Branch, you said that you wrote for a couple of other states in that. So what was it about, what made writing one for Arkansas unique, I guess?
We need that history. And the last time anyone had written a volume that was even close to what we've just published was probably back in the 1980s. So it was long overdue. It was just long overdue. And there are all of these stories about these fabulous Arkansas women or women with Arkansas connections that just weren't being published. And so it was time. It was time to do this work.
How did you make the determinations as to say, you know what, these stories are what we want to be able to put into this volume?
Well, we knew we wanted to cover the broad spectrum of women's history in Arkansas. So, of course, we started from the women who were here first, indigenous women, and we wanted to get as far into the 20th century as we possibly could. And so that largely informed our decision about what to publish.
Right. And I understand that there were a couple from Arkansas State, I think, who contributed. Is that right, in this?
Right. Our colleague in this department, Dr. Sarah Wilkerson Freeman, wrote the chapter on Hattie Caraway. And then also with Charisse's was who the others were from our department, but from...
From psychology, Dr. Loretta McGregor.
Dr. Loretta McGregor.
Yes. And Rachel Luster was actually a former Heritage Studies PhD student who wrote an essay as well.
Yeah, right. That's correct. Yeah, Rachel as well. So I think that rounds out the direct connections. Now, some, like Diana Fraley, I think, was a master's student here years ago, and she wrote a piece on Adolphine Fletcher Terry, but she got a PhD in Memphis. So some were actually like graduate students here just getting started years ago, and then... You know, saw the call for papers, and that's how we reconnected with them. So yeah.
Yeah, and others were established historians. So the chapter on Daisy Bates was written by Dr. Elizabeth Jakeaway, who wrote a book some years ago on the Little Rock Central High School crisis called "Turn Away Thy Son." And actually, she had interviewed Daisy Bates twice back in the 1970s, and those oral histories are at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. So we've got people who are fairly new scholars and others who are fairly well-established. And in at least one case, one person who isn't a historian at all.
And I was going to say, and Mike Dugan. We can't forget Mike Dugan, an Arkansas history legend. Yeah, sorry about that. Who Charisse edited his paper. So, but yeah, Mike Dugan's an Arkansas history legend, yeah.
What were of all the stories that were there, kind of give us some examples of the stories that were just where you learned so much.
I learned a lot about indigenous women in this state. And actually, I learned a lot about Daisy Bates. I'd always heard a lot of things about her, but the way Betsy Jakeaway wrote that article, she unearthed all kinds of information that people don't know anything about. They know her in the context of the Little Rock Central High School crisis, but they don't know things like that she was a rural activist, she was the sponsor for an African American agricultural beauty pageant. So it's because of the very deep research that these scholars have done that we learn things about these women that we wouldn't ordinarily know.
Yeah, same for you.
I'm sorry, and the question again on that one?
The question was some of the things that you learned.
I mean, I think one thing that I was an interesting theme that I learned from a couple, and I think would be true for many of these stories, is that a lot of these women who had unique opinions, they were changed by the fact that they had some connection outside of the state, and that was enabled them to look at some of the dynamics in the state and look differently. And some of these are positive and some are negative. Like, for instance, one example would be Amanda Trulock, who was a Connecticut mistress of slaves near Pine Bluff. So from New England, she did not know anything about slavery, but when she eventually migrated to Pine Bluff, she became the mistress of 62 slaves, and she was a great advocate of slavery, which is ironic, but yet at the same time, she kept close ties with her New England family and regularly visited there, and that made her somewhat of a reluctant Confederate. In fact, I would say a very ambivalent mm-hmm. Confederate. And so, you know, it's the experience outside of the state that made her maybe not fit the regular template. And another example, too, I think particularly fascinating was Adolphine Fletcher Terry, who was a well-born white woman growing up in Reconstruction, but whose parents sent her off to get a Northeastern education. And it was there for the first time where she began to look at her own ideas about growing up in the Jim Crow South. And she was challenged by the people she went to school with in the Northeast about, you know, why do you treat people of color this way? And she didn't think she treated them anyway. She just thought that was the way it was. But it was leaving Arkansas and then coming back to Arkansas that made her sort of challenge, you know, is this the way things have to be done? So I think that's an interesting commonality with many of these women. It's when they get outside of the state and then they come back, or they bring that outside perspective. And, you know, that creates tension, because then again, you know, in rural areas, especially in Arkansas, people sort of like, you know, why should we listen to you? You're not from here. Or that's an idea you got from out of here. And so it's a less valid idea. So that tension is always there, I think.
What about Matt? And I've got one another example. Mamie Phipps Clark, Dr. Mamie Phipps Clark, who was from Hot Springs, Arkansas, and she was the first African American woman to receive a PhD in psychology from Columbia University. Mm-hmm. But what most people don't know about her is that her master's thesis at Howard University was the basis for the Dahl test in Brown versus the Board of Education. So most people don't understand that Arkansas connection to that very important civil rights case. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Things that surprised you, stories that surprised you that you maybe weren't expecting.
I can't think of anything that really surprised me, but all of it was extremely interesting. I learned a lot working on this book. I also learned a lot about the process of co-editing a collection as well. We can speak volumes to that.
Dr. Edwards, what do you think about maybe some things that surprised you?
I think I've mentioned them, probably the two main cases. Adolphine Fletcher Terry surprised me because she breaks the grain of really during an era of where white women of her class are supposed to support Jim Crow, support the lost cause. And on the surface, she sort of does, but underneath, she really doesn't. And, you know, one of the civil rights activists know her perhaps as better than any other example from being a part of the Women's Emergency Committee that tried to bring back when Little Rock school system was closed after, you know, the fiasco of integration in 57, 58, then a group, you know, of mostly wealthy white women tried to work behind the scenes to bring the school back online again. And so, you know, there's surprises like that because on the one hand, she's a Southern white woman of a certain generation and has a certain point of view. But on the other hand, even before the school system integration crisis, she, you know, made it to where black patrons could check out library books at the library in Little Rock, and things like this under the radar that don't really get noticed as much. But then after sort of the tidal wave of integration, you know, subsides, people realize, hey, there were some people doing some other things that nobody paid attention to that could have caused an uproar, you know, but you didn't have a Governor Faubus or somebody else, you know, whipping up the base to get excited about it. So I think that was a surprise. And maybe just, you know, so many of the nameless stories, like some of our essays are about really no particular person. Like during the Civil War, it's mostly about how the women in the Ozarks survived the Civil War, and just the sheer brutality of trying to survive in those conditions. Or the main contribution on enslaved Arkansas women. There's really no star person in that particular chapter, but it's just the many nameless women in Arkansas history who were enslaved and who had to survive that. And so, I guess it's the surprise of survival, the way people survive some of these, you know, difficult conditions and stories.
Dr. Jones-Branch, okay, so I was going to ask about the editing part of this, so we'll go ahead and we'll talk about that here real fast. Kind of your thoughts on the editing. How did that go in that regard?
It was a struggle. Well, Gary and I divided up the essays really according to our historical expertise, but in terms of editing the essays, it required a lot of time. There was a lot of feedback, and it wasn't just from us. The volume also had to go to readers who gave substantial feedback. And there were moments when they wanted a lot or the feedback wasn't especially good, but guess who had to relay that to the authors? So there was that. There was also at least one instance where we just had to cut an essay because it kept going back to reviewers and it just wasn't up to standards. So we just had to make the hard decision to let that one go. One of the other struggles is that people don't always turn things on time. And I get that, right? Life happens and life is busy, but when we're working against the deadline, it was very, I'm not gonna speak for Gary, it was a little stressful for me. It was a little frustrating for me to say, we've gotta get this done and get it back to the University of Georgia Press. But I think all of that's okay because these were all things that we didn't know. We've both been authors in this series of books, but I had never done the co-editing thing before, so I just treated it all at the end of the day as a learning lesson, however frustrating it might have been at some junctures.
Do you have a better appreciation for editing now?
I haven't. Yes. When I contribute to edited collections now, and I'd always done this anyway, but when I contribute to edited collections, I make sure I turn my work in early, or at least I'm among the first to turn mine in, so I have a whole new respect for the process now that I've been on the other side of it.
Yeah. Dr. Edwards.
Right. I mean, I think to take a slightly different approach to that question is that I think in the age in which we live now, in which people are so used to reading things and things are instantly published online, that there's no vetting that goes on anymore, and that it's rare now for modern American readers to read something that's not only been vetted, but that has been edited over years, actually. I mean, these are projects that people spent years working on, and then we put them together into a book, and then we spent several years going back and forth with sometimes four, five, six drafts that were months apart sometimes between them. And so it's a rare thing now, I think, in the internet age in which we live to realize you're reading something that's been slow and has had time to sort of, you know, distill, and the ideas have sort of percolated down together to create something that, you know, I think the reader can have a level of confidence in that you really can't have in most of the quick published stuff that we see in front of us today. And so, you know, that's increasingly becoming a more rare thing. And so I appreciate that part of the editing process, that we're creating something that hopefully can stand the test of time, because it's still not perfect. There could still be some problems, interpretive problems or errors in there, but it represents many pairs of eyes have seen these, and many minds have sifted through these to bring this about.
Right. Dr. Branch, one of the things you said before, as we were kind of talking before we actually rolled tape, is you said there's been about a 30-year gap between the latest stories and these stories. Mm-hmm. Why do you think there was such a long gap in that?
I think a lot of it is, in my personal opinion, that sometimes people don't always value women's history. And I also think that the history hasn't been done, the work hasn't been done. Now that's changing, but for the longest time, for a lot of people, Arkansas history was about men. It was telling these stories about these men. And so as we really dug into the essays that these folks had written, we found out just how much women had done in this state. And let me also say this volume scratches the surface, and barely that. There are tons of stories out there that just didn't make it for one reason or another, or at the very least should make it into some other volume.
Yeah. Dr. Edwards, would you foresee more, future volumes on something like this?
I mean, there's certainly a desire. I mean, the University of Georgia Press thinks that there's room for a volume two, and so I don't know if Charisse and I will have anything to do with a volume two or not. But I mean, there are enough stories. That's true. If it's not us or if it's somebody else, Charisse is right. The surface has just been scratched. There's quite a few more of these stories out there.
Absolutely. I know one of the dilemmas for me, at least right now, is that I'm finishing up another book project in between writing other articles. And so that has to take precedence for right now.
Dr. Charisse Jones Branch and Dr. Gary Edwards, both talking about the latest book in the Southern Women series, Arkansas Women, Their Lives and Times. Dr. Jones Branch and Dr. Edwards will discuss the book at the Dean B. Ellis Library on the third floor Tuesday afternoon from 3 to 5. The library is hosting the event, and the A-State Office of Diversity and Community Engagement will sponsor refreshments. There'll be time for questions and answers following the discussion of the book. The event is free and open to the public Tuesday, September the 4th. Once again, that will be from 3 to 5. Books will be available for purchase, and the book is also available from major online retailers. I'm Jonathan Reeves, A-State Connections.